The secret is to work less as individuals and more as a team. As a coach, I play not my 11 best, but my best 11. Head football coach of the Fighting Irish, Newt Rockne. Coach Rockne led the Irish from 1918 to 1930, setting the greatest all-time winning percentage of 881, a record which leads both college and professional football even today. Newt was known as one of the most innovative and charismatic coaches or leaders of all time. Today, my guest, an avid Irish fan, comes on the Vertical View to discuss leadership 2020 style. Let's get to know my guest, Mr. Dwayne Agard, through a segment we'll call 11 Questions with DA, or Dwayne Agard. Why 11 questions, you ask? Well, great question. 11 questions for Notre Dame's 11 claimed national titles in football. So if you're ready, I know I am, let's get vertical. Let's welcome into the Vertical View, Mr., or should I say, Dr. Dwayne Agard. Welcome, DA.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, man.
It's great.
It's great to have you on. And if you're ready, let's get into question one of 11 questions with DA. And I'm so glad that your students call you that, because it just seems to roll off the tongue nicely.
By the way, I just got to tell you, for somebody who's 5'6", being on a show called Vertical, I'm very excited about this.
It's great. Well, I wanted to change it to horizontal, but it seemed a little cruel.
Yeah.
All right. Question one, Dwayne, if you're ready.
I am.
Why in the world are you a Fighting Irish fan?
Crazily, I probably have long stories for everything today, but it's actually a long story. So I grew up in Orlando, and I was a diehard, still am, Miami Dolphins fan.
All right.
But I didn't have a college football team to cheer for. So I grew up, you know, middle school, high school, never really rooted for a team. And, of course, all your friends in high school were Gators or Hurricane or Florida State fans. And eventually I realized that college football is better than the NFL. But if you don't have a team to follow, it's not that much fun. So I was kind of a free agent in my fanmanship. And so I thought I need a team to root for. And I went with Notre Dame because of the spirituality of the institution, the fact that they're on television all the time.
Right.
And I thought they were good. And that was like the down of the Willingham and Weiss era. So it's been some tough years, but they've bounced back a little bit with Brian Kelly. But I have loved being a part of Notre Dame, watching games. I've gone up there a couple times, actually kind of a crazy story with my dissertation. I stayed in a former convent by myself that is used during Notre Dame football weekends.
Excellent.
And so I stayed there. And I always tell people, doing your dissertation on sport and spirituality, staying at a convent sounds cool, but when you were the only person there, it was a little creepy.
Well, I was not expecting that after question one. I mean, that's behind the veil information.
You just wanted the quick, why is that fan? You got a little bit more.
I did. Well, let's keep going. You named a couple coaches. Who is your favorite coach? And then question three, least favorite.
Yeah, I got to go with Lou Holtz. He's just so great as a Notre Dame personality.
He so is.
And he's such a homer for Notre Dame. One of my friends lives in Orlando and saw him at a gas station and got him to record a video to me where he, you know, congratulated me on being an Irish fan and all the whole nine. but yeah, I love Lou Holtz, and probably I could definitely do without Charlie Weiss. He was quite a piece of work.
Well, and you're probably still paying him.
I think they are. It's pretty bad. You got to love college athletics. Just get there and like fail down and you will be a millionaire the rest of your life.
There you go. So let's go even further back now, pre-convent days. And what sport did you play as a kid?
Yeah, growing up, it was Little League baseball, high school baseball. Like it was it for me. I just played baseball my whole life, and that was in, like I said, I grew up in Orlando, and we did not have any professional teams when I grew up. And my little league baseball team was the Cincinnati Reds, and I got my uniform dirty a lot. And so that people thought I played like Pete Rose. My first little league team was the Reds, and I've been a diehard Reds fan ever since, even though I have no geographic connection to the, you know, state of Ohio or Indiana. Go figure.
And I love that because I'm a Cubs fan. So it seems as though as our careers have kind of gone down the road in this path together, we mm-hmm. seem to be on either side of that, right?
Yes. So yeah.
It's interesting that you say you're a Reds fan. I never knew that.
I'll share this too about sports I played. When I was a junior in high school, I had dislocated my elbow the year before on a baseball, just a freak play in baseball. Come back from the injury, and I wanted to join the wrestling team. And I was on the team for about a month, but the contact to my elbow just wasn't going to work. So I had to walk away from wrestling. So I went out for soccer late, and all my friends, you know, I'm a junior, and they all dared me to try out for the soccer team on the JV soccer. And so I made the team, and I tell people all the time, I played baseball my whole life, loved the game. I've played soccer for 1 year, and it was the most fun I ever had. And I think I realized in that moment that baseball, as much as it is a team sport, it's really an individual sport played with teammates. But when I played soccer, I feel like I played a team sport for the first time. You could go out and have the best game of your life, and you don't have a stat to show for it. Right. It's just a different game, and you really have to rely on a team. And I loved it. I really loved that year.
So moving into your college days, and I'm sure you had a ton of schools to pick from. How did you end up at the school that you ended up at?
Well, I played high school baseball in Orlando. My high school team, one of our pitchers would go on to pitch for Auburn. One would go on to pitch for Florida State. Our third baseman went to West Point. Our shortstop played at the University of Miami.
A little bit stacked is what you're saying.
Yeah. And you would think we would be good, right? We were 500. we were 500 in Orlando because you go play Dr. Phillips and they have AJ Przinski behind the plate and Johnny Damon playing center field. Right. You go over to play West Orange and you've got, you know, Mike Maroth or Jason Veritek at Lake Brantley. The talent in Central Florida was insane. My dream was to go to a Christian college, to surf every day, and to play baseball. Those were my three things that I really wanted to do in college. And so really zoned in on Palm Beach Atlantic and went down there as a freshman and got to check all three boxes, surf every day as much as there were waves, and play college baseball. One of my claim to fames is I broke up a no-hitter against Embry-Riddle. I led off the game with a single, and we didn't get a hit the rest of the night.
So you broke it up without even knowing it.
I did. Yeah, that was all we got. Let off the game with a single, and that's all she wrote.
Well, Paul Beach was on my short list back in the day, but I had to do the opposite because if I had the accessibility to the beaches that you did, I would have never made it through school.
I really can remember going to class with a wet bathing suit on and flip-flops. And it was brilliant. I absolutely loved being down there. I do tell people, though, it was for me, you know, going to a public high school and ended up at a Christian college. I think I was a little bit surprised by the lack of spirituality within the athletic department. And that would really have a profound impact on my whole career. But I was used to being, you know, one of the few Christians on my public high school and being a spiritual leader and being active at FCA. I just was expecting to bump into more Christians on the baseball team at the Christian college. And then I think I was expecting the coaches to add some value of spirituality into my life. And I never saw that there. I'm not saying that's who they are today or after that season, but while I was there within that specific program, there wasn't a lot of spirituality and it was, I think for me is when the curtain got pulled back on Christian higher education, at least in athletics, that, you know, the missional compromise exists just as much there as it does anywhere else.
Sure. Well, I've got four questions I just want you to pop through here, and then we've got we've got two more, and it's going to go into some of the things that you're just leading into there. But when you did go to class after surfing, what was your favorite class?
You know, I took a philosophy class, and I still remember my professor's name. It was Dr. Bible, believe it or
not.
No
way.
Yeah, Dr. Bible, Dana Bible. And I loved the class. And there was a guy in my class, his name was Sal Muchimichi. And Sal and I became good friends. And fast forward, like, crazy number of years later, and Sal gets a job at Catawba as a history professor and calls me up and says, wouldn't it be cool if we ever could work together? And I really wasn't looking for a job, but Sal was pretty instrumental in getting me over to Catawba.
That's great. So Sal and Dr. Bible.
Yes.
That's too good. All right, so favorite leader. All-time favorite leader.
That is a good – I probably would go with Pat Williams, just growing up in Orlando.
Yeah, excellent.
General manager.
Great book.
Of the Orlando Magic. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's a prolific writer. I think one of his goals is to run 100 marathons and write 100 books. And, you know, growing up in Orlando, in fact, I played high school baseball with his son, Bobby. And so it was you know, we had opportunities to go over to the Williams family. In fact, Bobby got a lot of grief when we traded Chris Webber for Penny Hardaway because we just thought that was a terrible trade. So we're like, Bobby, what's your dad doing, you know? And but he is a great leader. He represents both that you can be in that, you know, the professional sports world, live out your faith.
Yep.
And really operate as a high executive leader and a servant leader at that. And I've always been a big admirer of Pat Williams.
Last book you read?
Last book I've read. I'm reading the Rachel Dellenhopper book right now.
Okay, I was going to say no textbooks.
What's a Girl Worth? Oh. And she was one of the victims in the Larry Nassar abuse. And I'm also reading a book with my daughter, 12 Years a Slave, which has really been a powerful read. So we've been reading that. So those would be two books that I'm reading currently that I'm really, really enjoying.
And then I don't know that you're into the podcast game. Now, obviously, you listen to this one all the time. But what is it that's on your playlist right now that you just keep hitting redo or play again?
I tell you what, Chris, and I don't know if it's just our friendship, but I literally laugh out loud listening to your podcast. There was one line where you talked about vacationing in Myrtle Beach. And I just, it was just classic. But yeah, I do love your podcast. I've got a Notre Dame football podcast, of course, that I follow. There's one I really like a lot called The Thinking Fellows.
Yeah.
And it's a Lutheran theology podcast. And then I like Pardon the Interruption. I consume a lot of that.
All day.
And Revisionist History is fantastic. Really like Revisionist History and anything that Malcolm Gladwell produces.
Well, there's some good plugs right there. And a shameless one for The Vertical View.
That's so right.
Now I'm going to get into a little deeper question here. And actually, the last one is one that I really want you to get into. But this one's a little more fun. But I find it to be pretty deep. I mean, I wear a goatee, and I noticed over the years you're a soul patch kind of guy. So what in the world? Why? Why do you leave that thing right in the bottom of your lip? Why?
There is no logic. I think the only time I literally remember thinking, should I shave it for a job interview one time? And I did. And that's the only time it's not been there.
Did you get the job?
I did get the job. So that worked out.
It did.
Yeah.
Man. So,
but it stays. I guess it's my connection to my Florida roots. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I often want to touch it, but it just seems a little awkward. So I've never done that.
Yeah, I think we should keep it that way.
Yeah. All right, this is going to be awkward going into this question. This is number 11 of 11 questions with DA, all because of the 11 claimed championships by the Fighting Irish.
That's right.
And you talked a little bit about the connection with faith with Notre Dame and why you chose that as your football team. How does your faith intermingle with your leadership or teaching and even your life? You've touched on it already, Dwayne. Talk a little bit more about that. How do you intermingle that, particularly as a teacher now?
Yeah, I think I really go back to that Palm Beach Atlantic experience was really important for me to walk through, and not to really. I think we're always learning. We're either learning what to do or what not to do. And so I think there was a little bit of disappointment that there was a lack of spiritual leadership from people at a Christian institution that you would have thought that was a really purpose of why they would want to be employed there. And so from that moment forward, I'm thankful for that season because it ended up shaping me as a future athletic director at a Christian institution to make sure that we were missionally focused at all times and we didn't allow success or other things of busyness to become more important than hopefully the mission. I think integrating my faith as a faculty member, we just had a lecture today on how sport unites and sports divides. And there's just so many stories of brokenness in sport, and there's so many great stories of redemption in the Bible. And I think we get to play a role as sports leaders, both in the classroom and outside the classroom, of seeing broken systems redeemed. And I think that's what gets me excited. I tell my students, if working in the sport industry is about hanging up banners or championships or getting a paycheck, I'm not really that into that. But if it's about using sport, which I argue is one of the most influential mediums in our society to bring forth transformation in communities and people's lives, where do I sign up? That's what gets me excited about this thing called sport that is so popular, it's so accepted in our culture. You could even argue we're overly infatuated with sport at an unhealthy level. Well, I think for us as leaders that hopefully can have a kingdom-minded perspective, that we can now say this thing we get to do with students, now let's bring discipleship into it. Let's bring gospel opportunities into it and not just do sport for sport's sake, because that's pretty shallow. That doesn't have eternal value to me.
Well, that's 11 questions with Dr. Dwayne Agard. And so, Dwayne, let's get to the reason why you're here. It's to talk about leadership, and I'm doing air quotes right now, 2020 style.
Right.
But before we do, I need to do a little bit of, some background on Dwayne.
Do we have to put a mask on, or are we good?
Well, I've got my mask on already, so I'm hoping that you do.
I do as well.
All right, so here we go. Dwayne has served as a collegiate AD for 9 years, I think, right? At Southeastern University.
Yep.
And that's in Lakeland, Florida. One of the things that I really loved about what Dwayne did there is he launched the ALI, or the Athletic Leadership. And I think it's Institute. Is that correct?
Correct, yep. Yep. Athletic Leadership Institute.
Yeah, love. And Dwayne, when I was an AD at Southern Wesleyan, Dwayne was able to come and share some of the things that he learned, but also taught through that institute. And man, if you can ever get your hands on some of his programming with that, that would be some good stuff for you. Dwayne also grew the budget from, I think, $350,000 to close to $2 million while he was there. As well as expanding the department, the support staff, and the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And then finally, he led the Fire, or Southeastern University, to 44 national championships appearances, winning the national title 14 times. That's some good stuff in leadership out of Dwayne. He and his family then transitioned from full-time athletic administration into full-time faculty world, which he bragged about when he did that as I was still in the AD gig. And I'm still a little bitter about that. But before he landed at Catawba, he spent some time at Wingate University and Pfeiffer University. And now he is at Catawba, and he serves as the sports management chair and associate professor there. And man, wow, Dwayne, that's that's the short version. I didn't get into all the things that you've published and all the conventions you spoke at. You've had a phenomenal career to date. Man, I'd love to get into the leadership part now if you're ready.
Absolutely. And I know that some of your, you know, former guests have been in athletics, from Furman and athletic directors as well. And I think you might agree with this, but being an athletic director can be very lonely at times. And I know for me, some of the conversations that we got to have at conventions, those hallway conversations were so valuable. I felt known. I felt heard. I felt that somebody else was processing and walking through similar challenges that I was. And I really valued, you know, your friendship, the mentorship that you provided to me. And I know I can remember one conversation, you know, in my garage and you talking me off the ledge of just challenges and frustrations I was going through during that season. So I really appreciate your friendship and your leadership as well. It's meant a lot to me in an industry. If you think about, I think there are two industries that are just burnout. Just they're set up for a lot of burnouts. It's ministry and it's college athletics. And you work on a Christian college in college athletics, man, you put the two together and it could be really difficult. And I know I experienced some of those challenges, some self-inflicted, you know, by myself, and some just cultural challenges that you walk through.
Yeah. I resonate with all of that. I appreciate you saying that. I do think that's one of the reasons why we're doing the podcast. It's a continued avenue for me to be able to get people like you in front of, hopefully, people who are listening that need to be encouraged to know that they're not by themselves, and that you and I, as we discussed, we're trying to achieve something, but at the same time, I want to be impacting people, influencing, but I also want the same for me. And right. And I'm hopeful that's what our conversation does today, is that it does have some influence, but it, at the end of the day, it impacts people, and really what we want is it impacts people for Christ. So Dwayne, this is a big question and you've already touched a little bit on it, and we'll kind of dive into it a little bit as we go, but how do you define leadership?
I love the phrase leadership is discipleship, and I'm really drawn to the Great Commission. And I think that's a mandate that all of us have as believers. And so I think leadership is an opportunity to disciple people, no matter which relationship you're in. For me as an athletic director, it was a chance to be a part of discipling student athletes, raising up coaches who are hopefully discipling student athletes. But that was the language we used a lot with our captains, is leadership is discipleship. I can remember going on retreats with our captains and saying, look, if let me define what leadership is here at Southeastern. If you get to the end of this academic year and you haven't discipled one person, you haven't really met our expectations of being a leader. You may have had a title, but you didn't lead. And so we're asking you not to have a title, but to influence one life. And I think sometimes discipleship is a scary word, that people are, what does that mean? But for whatever reason, we're okay with the word leadership. Right. And I think they're at times very interchangeable, or that we can use leadership for discipleship.
Yes. So you've spent a lifetime influencing young people, and you give an example while you're at Southeastern. What are two or three things that, and I think you've just mentioned one, things that you would hope to teach them as a former AD, now even, what are some of the things that you're hoping that they just really hang on to? I mean, we could list out 11 different things like we did earlier, but we all know that there's probably two or three things that I'm going to grasp a hold of. What are those from your angle?
Yeah, I think of male athletes and athlete and identity, and I think that's a tough one. I know for me, I wrestle with that as a former athlete, and even wrestle with that as a former athletic director walking away and transitioning from that role. And so if we could raise up, you know, student athletes and college graduates that are healthy in their identity of who they are, their calling on their life, and ultimately, hopefully, who they are in Christ, I think that is so critical versus their identity in the sport they play, their identity and their accomplishments. I think we've raised and been a part of student athletes, and really their parents have raised them so well, where they're sometimes they're the greatest athletes in our athletic department, but they're fully committed to whatever path that they have, and they don't even think professional careers in their future. And then we have other athletes that are not even near our best athletes, and for whatever reason, they think they're going pro. And so it is a unique reality. I have this premise I would love to explore one time, is I think at the lower levels of college athletics, we have more misguided male athletes that think they're going pro than we do maybe at the Division I. I know when I was at Pfeiffer, they just announced we were moving the athletic department to Division III status. And we, that year, I taught a first year seminar class, and there was a lot of basketball players. When I say basketball players, they were on our JV's JV team. We had three basketball teams, and they were on the JV. And they all, that day, I had them write on the board what they wanted to do after college. And they all wrote, play pro basketball. And it was like, it was so surprising to me that here's a school that's announced it's moving its athletics from Division II to Division III, and you're on the JV's JV team, and you think you're going to go play pro.
Right.
And so we really have to get in. Male athletes are really locked in. Their identity has really been falsified, but their value is in who they are, what they produce athletically. And I just think we got to – and some of that's young, and they're allowed to be young and naive and freshmen, but hopefully by the time they graduate, I hope that they're more connected to a calling on their life and not still hanging on to this belief that they're going to be a pro athlete out of a Division II or Division III school. It's just so rare.
Yeah. So as a current college professor, what you're looking for kids now, as you go through your coursework, you're looking for those kids who potentially are superstars in the sports arena, right? And I've seen you on social media kind of point out opportunities for kids. You do a great job with that. What are you looking for? What is it that when you see, and I'll use my name, Chris Williams, in your classroom, what is it that you're seeing in some of these kids that you're like, wow, that kid's got it?
I think communication is important, but maybe more than your communication skills, just the desire to stay curious and hungry to learn. If you give me a student who's hungry, and it's probably the same when you were coaching, Chris, that you had those athletes that stayed after practice to get better. They wanted to be coached up. They weren't there because they had to be. They were there because they wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I think when we have those students in the classroom, man, they're incredible. And maybe a phrase I would say is taking advantage of their education or experiencing their education.
That's good.
That will do that. I tell my students a lot. In fact, I just used this example in an introduction to sport management class just the other day. And I've been to a lot of graduations. I have yet to see a professional or a college athletic program sign a student athlete to work in their marketing department or to be an athletic administrator because they got a degree from our institution in sport management. These people aren't there. They don't show up. People don't show up at graduations to offer jobs. But it's what's on your resume before graduation that will set you up to get a job. And maybe you've already got the job set up for yourself. So we want to help our students put things on their resume. And like most colleges, we have a lot of student athletes. I do believe you can do both and. It's not an either or. You either do sports and do your academics. I think you can do both and.
Yep.
However, our athletes do have a disadvantage because there is somebody pulling on their schedule for 30 to 40 hours a week. So they're going to have to be more intentional to step into their education and really take advantage of it because they got to juggle an intercollegiate, athletic career, which is very challenging.
So Dwayne, let's go back to Palm Beach Atlantic days. You've got your surfboard, you slip on your flip flops and you're heading into class. But now you're looking, I don't know, you're probably almost 50. I'm 50.
43.
Well, all right. Well, you got a little bit of time. Young guy, what do you wish you learned earlier? Like, so you're 43 and you're like, man, if I would have only learned that earlier.
First of all, Dave Ramsey's right. Listen to him in all things.
Shameless plug for Dave Ramsey.
Yes. The guy's smarter than me. He's got more money than me. I should have listened to him a long time ago. No, I think one thing I would have given myself advice is pace myself. It's okay to not do it all overnight. You know, when I was a young athletic director, I don't think I thought I need to do it all night, but I just had this energy of just running at a really breakneck speed that was really unsustainable. And I think what happened is I run at such a level, and this is, you know, before I had kids, and then more things show up on your plate, you know, as you start balancing a family, and then there's a guilt. You start to feel guilty where I used to do all these things and now I don't.
Yep.
And nobody is making you feel bad for it, but I feel like I'm letting my team down. I feel like I'm letting somebody down because I used to do more. And I think I ran at a level that was unsustainable. And if I could have given myself that advice, I think I would have benefited from it.
That's actually great advice. And it's great advice even for me today. To not feel guilty for not running at breakneck pace. As I've transitioned out of athletic directing into an executive director role with a company here, I sometimes feel guilty that I'm not working 24/7.
Yeah.
And that's a falsehood that mm-hmm. I think you and I have both walked into and now have both walked out of. So I'm actually going to take that as a...
One thing I think you were kind of ribbing on me earlier, I think during my first week at Pfeiffer, when I had left athletic administration and left Southeastern and moved up to North Carolina, I went to my car at 3:00 on a Friday and I looked around and I was the only person still there. And it was such a shock to my system. I feel like leaving athletic administration and coming into the classroom that first year was the equivalent of driving a NASCAR to walking. Like, the speed was that different. And I definitely wrestled with my identity. Even leaving Southeastern, I felt like I had my dream job and I wasn't sure. I felt like, man, if I let go of this, I'll never get it back. I'll never have the opportunity to be an athletic director again. This is really, I knew what I had and I was really thankful and appreciative of this opportunity to shape an athletic department. And I prayed about this opportunity to move to North Carolina. And it was pretty convicting where God said, I felt like he said to me, oh, you think you put yourself there? You had nothing on your resume. And I placed you at Southeastern. And if I want to put you back in athletic administration, I can do that on my timeline. You don't need to hold on to something. You don't need to clutch something as if it'll never come back to you. And man, that was a really... I needed that moment from God to just release it because I think I was clutching it a little too hard. I had a lot of my identity wrapped up into it. And when it's something you've dreamed about and something you've wanted to do, you can see how easy it would be to do that. But this season since that time has been so, so valuable. One of my favorite pictures, Chris, is my first year here. My daughter was like 5 and I was her t-ball coach. And there's a picture of she and I in a Cincinnati Reds uniform for one of her t-ball games. And I look at that picture and again, you can do both. I'm not saying it. I wasn't in a space that I could do both, but there are leaders that can, and they do both. But I realized when I had that moment, I don't know, I definitely wouldn't have been able to coach my daughter's t-ball team. And I don't know that I make it to her game. You know, that was the pace that I was operating in as an AD. And it was, that picture means a lot to me because it's the missed moments that I didn't have to miss because I was able to find that transition, that opportunity that got me to the classroom. And I do think God will open that door if that's where I'm supposed to be at a later date.
Powerful words here from Dwayne Agard, now the sports management chair at Catawba. And Dwayne, if we can, we'll wrap this up with a little bit of fun with, let's talk a little Power 5 football and what looks to be the impending football season.
I just heard today that, which is kind of bizarre, so I'd love to, a student said this to me, so I need to read up on it, that President Trump is looking to meet with the Big Ten commissioner to start football ASAP in the Big Ten. So whether that can happen or not, but I do think maybe the Big Ten is having some buyer's remorse on canceling their season.
Big time, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I live down here in Clemson country, and so we hear ACC football, and obviously everybody hears about the SEC.
So you're Did I tell you I went to the Notre Dame Clemson game in the hurricane a few years ago?
One of the best games ever.
Let me just say, obviously, I'm a huge Notre Dame fan, and I've been to Notre Dame Stadium, and I've been to Virginia Tech. I haven't been to every college football stadium by any means. That game and that atmosphere is the best atmosphere in college football that I've ever been a part of. If you can go to a Clemson football game, I don't care who it is, it was incredible. If I was a Notre Dame fan, I would have switched allegiances that night. Clemson, like, that is an incredible place to watch college football. Loved it.
Yeah, it's an amazing place to live, and we're fortunate to be here when Clemson's at its probably best, previous or ever again. So Notre Dame opens, I don't even know who they open against, but
they open with Duke at home on September 12th. I think the betting line just opened up, and it's like a 20-point spread. So we'll see if that's something Notre Dame can cover.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So I'm interested to get your take on this. So you're president at Notre Dame. They opened up face-to-face, and then they just went virtual. But he's one of the guys that came out and said, if we don't have our students on campus, how can we play college football? How do you think they walked that back? And what do you, as a college professor, what, and former AD, what, where are you at on that?
Dr. Rutland, the president of Southeastern that I got to work under, he had a leadership line that I've always loved. And he said, I'm allowed to be smarter tomorrow than I was yesterday. And I think what these college presidents rightfully so said in early summer is, if our college students aren't coming back, then how could we do college sports in the fall? But what happened between them saying that is the football teams were coming back into different communities for the month of July. Notre Dame football and a lot of teams, they were on campus working out, training, being tested with COVID, and proving that there was little to no positive tests. And kind of crazily, it was when the student population came back. The student population doesn't have the incentive to be as safe as the rest of the students. And what I've seen here, even at Catawba, even here as a faculty member, we had to come back and all believe that it was going to be like it used to be, and then realize it wasn't going to be that way. And I know that we were told all summer, we're going to have to lecture and speak with a mask on. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not doing that. I'll do it. I'll tell you that I'm going to do it to make sure the school year gets open. But, you know, I'm going to look for opportunities. I'm going to get a shield to speak behind so the students can see my face. And I'm telling you, I've lectured every day with a mask on because that just wasn't the reality once we got back, you know. And so I think students had to get back, realize that there isn't a lot of flexibility, complain about the things they don't like, and then realize you got to submit to them. And then hopefully once that happens, people understand, okay, we can do this. One of our students in the school, you know, he said, do you think we'll go home like the other schools? And I said to him, I sure hope not. I hope we're a small enough community where we can respect one another and social distance and wear the mask and do what we can do to protect one another. I said, but just so you understand, we're a small school. And if we do go home, at some point when you come back, the coaches and some of the faculty that you love, they won't be here because there is an economic relationship to being open and being closed, especially for our small liberal arts private schools. So yeah, I think you got presidents that are trying to, you know, understand the economic engine that is, you know, a university life is tuition, room, and board, but also be safe. And I think you can do both at the same time. At least some campuses can, and some, you know, the students don't have any interest in trying to be safe, and that's going to hurt a bigger majority of the population, unfortunately, because I know faculty, we want to be here. We want to be in the classroom with our students. We want those touch points with them to do college. So I, in my opinion, that's what happened with some of these presidents. They said, we're not going to do it, but then they got to reevaluate and say, you know what? It is safer for some of these students, athletes to be there. I think if I was a college president, though, I would make sure it's not athletes only. I would make sure that there are other extracurricular, because you don't want that appearance of some of the, you know, some of the commercialization attacks that college athletics is getting, and some of it rightfully so. You know, it's there. But the other thing is, I saw Texas Tech or Texas A&M is a $25 or $40 million shortfall this year.
Yeah.
They're looking to lay off 40 staff members. It's tough.
It's tough really days tough for time. Sure. It was Texas Tech, and it's just a ton of money that you said it right. Like the Power Five in particular have to really think about both sides of the engine. And it's tough days to be a leader for sure. So Dwayne, to wrap up our time together, what's your prediction for the Fighting Irish this year?
I got them going 10-1. No. I got them in Charlotte.
Oh no.
11 game season. I got them 10-1. They do have Clemson in November. I think it's November 7th. What would you know? You remember the big game where they beat Florida State, went number one, and then lost to Boston College the next week in a huge upset? Yes. Do you know who they play the week after Clemson? Boston College. What if history repeated itself and Notre Dame upsets Clemson only to lose the next week to Boston College? So that's my prediction. I got them going 10-1. Shocking the world, beating Clemson, but somehow losing a game that they should not lose. And then we're going to get a good rematch in Charlotte for the ACC championship. Because I think Notre Dame is pretty – I'm not lying to you right now, Chris. I have a phone call coming in from South Bend, Indiana. I don't know who it is, but it's probably Brian Kelly.
Well, my word. We better get you off the line here then. Goodness sakes, Brian Kelly's calling. Probably call to see if you want to be part of that.
I just started talking about Notre Dame, and I'm getting phone calls from some South Bend.
Well, this has been Dwayne Agard, and if you want to follow Dwayne on Twitter, I would encourage you to do so. It's at Dwayne Agard, and that's a tough name to spell, but I'm going to do it for you. It's at D-U-A-N-E-A. Is there two A's in that now?
Yep. A-A-G-A-A-R-D.
A-A-G-A-A-R-D. It's Dwayne Agard. Dwayne, thanks for being on The Vertical View.
Thank you, Chris. I loved it. I enjoy your podcast. Every one of your communicators have been fantastic. You've had a great lineup of guests, and I really appreciate you sharing some of your battles with anxiety and mental health here recently, and I really enjoyed consuming that podcast as well. So thank you for what you're doing. And this is great. Hopefully I'm like Ed McMahon or whatever. I'm a repeat guest maybe.
Ooh. Yeah, I'll get you a chair.
Boom. Done.
Dwayne Agard. Follow him on Twitter. Thanks, Dwayne.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, we have reached the end of another episode of The Vertical View. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Dwayne Agard, Associate Professor and Sports Management Chair at Catawba College. You can follow Dwayne on Twitter at Dwayne Agard. That's at D-U-A-N-E-A-A-G-A-A-R-D, at Dwayne Agard. And to learn more about Catawba College and their athletic and academic offerings, visit their website at www.catawba.edu. If you enjoyed Vertical View, please subscribe, give it a 5-star rating, and leave a glowing review. I'd be thankful. Well, thanks for listening, and I'll see you the next time at The Vertical View.